we will hear from you as well as you're hearing from us today. I've got to say, among the joys that I have had recently, to be able to introduce someone who is clearly a visionary leader, not just in healthcare, but ladies and gentlemen, a visionary leader in terms of leadership. And so when you're talking about comments, when you mention Gail Warden, and when you mention things that have occurred in this message, I remind you that you add value to yourself for having done that as well. I say this from someone who had the opportunity, when I first was chairing the Spiro Health System Board, to see this gentleman when he was executive vice president of the American Hospital Association, a really key role for a visionary leader. He went on to becoming, as many of you know, the CEO of the Henry Ford Health System, a fully integrated health delivery and financing vertical system. Pay attention to those words. Very, very important in terms of his message and in terms of his vision. I think that also during that time when I was on the AHA, American Hospital Association's first Congress of Hospital Trustees, and then the Governance Council, that we saw him, we saw the state of Michigan as a leader, as indeed very much connected to Gail Warden. As we continue to move, and when I served on the Michigan Health and Hospital Association Board, the state of Michigan looked to Gail, whether or not he was a board member, but in terms of not just the view of a CEO of a health system, one that had been inculcated not only with Dartmouth experience and being a Wolverine as well, but somebody who as well had had a view of not only where we had been and how to analyze it, but indeed where we are going as guiding people at the congressional level, guiding people on state policy, guiding people in higher ed, and all of us as students. Right now, I will be leaving for the American Hospital Association's Regional Policy Board, where in fact, the conversation on suggesting policy for AHA is going to be focused on these very issues of quality and cost and how we look at health plans, how we look at options for people. I think it's important that as you listen and learn and become advocates with the messages from Gail, that you have the opportunity to think about somebody who's been the practitioner, who's been the leader, who continues to inform in terms of major healthcare policy boards, the future of healthcare in the United States of America. While he no longer has the day-to-day operational leadership of one hospital, one health system, we're looking at what's happening now, what's going to be happening in the future. And ladies and gentlemen, I would just say, please join me in welcoming somebody who really makes a difference as a visionary leader.
And I know after that introduction and the fact that she said I was a Wolverine, I don't know how welcome I am in this setting, but we'll try. I thought I would begin my presentation by reading you a quote from David Broder, who I think most of you know, which he's something he said last year at this time in late March. He said, if people are ever stirred up about health care the way they are over who's going to win the master's green jacket or who's going to win the women's or men's final four, something might happen. And I think that's really true. One of our problems is that we don't get people stirred up enough about health care. It's something they're watching all the time. They know there's trillions of dollars being spent on it. Yet at the same time, they're a little skeptical and aren't sure whether they're getting a good return on their investment. And when you begin to talk about return on investment in healthcare, you very quickly move to quality and cost. And I think both the consumer, the public, our legislators, employers, and providers all are faced with a major dilemma as it relates to cost and quality and the correlation between the two. And what I hope to do today, I'm not going to dwell on all these slides, but I do want to accomplish two or three things. Number one, I want you to hear from me what I think are kind of the sources of truth on some of these issues, namely the Institute of Medicine of the National Academy of Sciences, Rand Health, which has done some excellent work on quality and the fact that 50% of the people in this country do not receive the quality health care that they are expected to receive. And I also want to take a little bit of time to talk about what I think, and it's not in my slides, legislators need to be thinking about if they're thinking about a national health insurance, or I mean a state health insurance plan. You know, what are some of the goals that they should be establishing and monitoring as that dialogue goes on? And as you know, has been said previously by Nice and Paul, there obviously is a lot of discussion about that in this state. And I think every state in the country is recognizing that if they want health care reform, it may have to come at the state level before it's going to come at the national level because of the fact that it's just going to be very difficult to get everyone in the boat if we really want to have true health care reform. Obviously, we're at a crossroads at this point in time. We've got high consumer expectations about what they want from their health care in terms of quality and safety, what they want in terms of small out-of-pocket expenses, what they want in terms of increased technology and drugs that will make health care even better than it already is in this country. And at the same time, we've got a business community that, to some extent, I think is talking out of both sides of its mouth. On the one hand, they say we need universal health insurance. On the other hand, they're basically saying you got to do something about costs because they're killing us, and it's having a major impact upon our ability to compete globally. And also, they believe that there needs to be better coverage. And as all this gets discussed and comes together, particularly at the state level, it's the legislators who are going to have to really figure out how to sort it out. And I don't believe that, wait a minute here.
Excuse me, sir.
Yes, these two.
I know, but I pushed it, I didn't move. Is it moving up there? What about here?
Hit the space bar. Sorry about this.
We'll skip the first couple slides because you've heard most of that anyway from Denise and Paul about the healthcare environment and some of the numbers as it relates to the uninsured and the impact of healthcare costs. And let's go to what I call kind of the sources of truth. And as you are undoubtedly aware, the Institute of Medicine, National Academy of Sciences, in the last 10 years has done substantial work on the quality of healthcare. And I fortunately had an opportunity to be a part of all of that because I was on the original committee and one of the co-authors of the study on To Err's Human, which was the study on patient safety and crossing the quality chasm. And as we debated that in committee before we wrote the report, what we really talked about is, you know, how do you define quality? And you define quality basically on the likelihood of the desired outcomes and the use of the knowledge consistent with current health knowledge if you're going to have quality. And In many cases, of course, that's called evidence-based medicine. From a cost standpoint, the focus is a little more difficult to define because cost gets defined to some extent by government. It gets defined by employers in terms of what it's costing them. It gets defined by third-party payers based upon what they view as their stake in the game. And of course, one of their major concerns, as Paul indicated, is the whole question of adverse selection and whether they're paying for things they shouldn't be paying for. The providers are used to being lectured daily almost about the fact that they're the ones that are driving the healthcare costs up. And individuals, of course, have got concerns about cost because it impacts what comes out of their pocket. And much of this is because of the misalignment of financial incentives that create a major obstacle to being able to reconcile all that for any of those different stakeholders. When we talk about the quality of health care, one of the things that we always want to see is whether we're getting the return on what we expect we should be getting, and is the patient getting what they should receive for their particular diagnosis or their particular condition. And as you know, Rand Health did a major study on this, led by Elizabeth Beth McGlynn, in which she found in 12 major metropolitan areas around the country, one of which was Lansing, that overall adults received about half of the recommended care that their condition required. And this didn't differ by metropolitan community. Sometimes it differed within a community, but at the same time, what they learned is that people just don't receive the care that they're supposed to receive, despite the fact that the dollars get incurred and the resources get utilized. as I said, no community had consistently the best or worst quality. All socioeconomic groups were pretty much at risk for poor care. And in fact, one of the things that's also been learned recently, you know, we talk about disparities in healthcare, that certain populations don't get as good a care as others. And the facts are that in many cases, Rand found that minorities received just as good a care or better care than the rest of the population. So this is a very important consideration when you talk about quality. When we talk about the correlation between quality and profit or quality and cost, we probably should look to a study that was done by Christus Health System, which is a Catholic system that is pretty much focused in the in Texas, middle part of the United States, and actually is its CEO is the former medical director at Henry Ford, in which they have found that there is some correlation between financial performance and the possibility of better quality. And in 18 of their facilities, they studied this and found that where quality was better, the operating margin was a little better, the cash collections were a little better, and there were less denials by insurance companies. And that's a product of the fact that they're getting quality and cost aligned in their organization. And that organization, like Henry Ford, and like Kaiser, and you know a few others, are fairly integrated. And what we mean by that is that the financing arm and the healthcare delivery arm and all the different facilities and different programs are all under the same umbrella, and the people that run that organization are able to see how by tweaking one thing it's going to impact something else and should have overall better outcomes than they would have if they weren't integrated. Trying to improve quality, we've heard about pay for performance. One of the issues there is how it's going to be measured and how much money will be involved, and As you might expect, when there's a small amount of money involved, you can see a little bit of improvement. But when the money gets larger, the improvement is not necessarily that much greater. And that's a consideration. If you want to improve quality, you also want to consider releasing